Happy Tuesday, everybody. It's Susan King. We're back where genealogy and spirit connect. Tell you, it's been a strange week. The Friday we had snow, and today it's 70 degrees. So, and snow on the Third Coast down here is pretty strange. But I understand the weather's being a little bit irritating all over the country. And in fact, we had a little bit of issue here at the radio station, which caused us to be delayed just a little bit. But we are here, and there is a little bit of a program note. We originally had Alexander Bider scheduled for today, and he had a conflict with a client. So I asked Bennett Greenspan to come back. He was a guest on my show many, many months ago, I guess probably show number 4, if I remember correctly, Bennett. But you know, one of the most important things in genealogical research today, and it's something I think that we can't talk about enough, is how important DNA testing is for those who are doing their research. There are stories galore about how genetic genealogy, as it is known today, can be a difference and make quite a difference in whether or not you are successful in making connections with family and whether you are not. And I want to open up the lines today, and especially if there's anybody that has a success story that they would like to share with us. And that number is 888-815-9756. Also, too, if you have any questions for Bennett Greenspan, who is the founder and president of Family Tree DNA, probably one of the largest and one of the first, I think, that came on the scene with this whole concept of using DNA testing for genealogical research. Bennett and I have a lot in common. I think one of the first things that we have is that we are both serial entrepreneurs. We seem to find things we get interested in and move forward and make them into careers. And Bennett has done just that with Family Tree DNA. So, Bennett, welcome again.
Well, thank you so much for having me back, Susan.
Well, it's always a pleasure. I'm hoping that we might get some people that may be calling in to talk about some of their success stories. But, you know, one of the things that I think is so important, and I think that people don't really understand what the whole concept of DNA testing for genealogy really is. And I'd like for you to kind of give us just a brief overview so that those that are considering it or have not considered it, you know, can really get an idea of what we're really talking about.
Well, thank you, Susan. Most of us have a pretty good idea of who our grandparents were, but once we get beyond 2 or 3 or 4 generations, the trail seems to run cold for most of us. And so genetic genealogy is bringing, in effect, biology to the, you know, to the hobby of genealogy, allowing us to use DNA to confirm paper trail links where the paper trail seems to show that two people are related, but we don't have a census record or a courthouse record or a letter from that relative to your ancestor that starts out dear cousin, something that would confirm a relationship. We can use DNA testing to show that two people, particularly on the direct male line, are related to each other. And this has been used now since early 2000, so the best part of 9 years this technology has been used. It's been our company alone has tested over 500,000 people since our inception, Susan. And so that gives you an idea of the interest level on the part of the general public in using DNA to confirm relationships where the paper trail runs cold.
I remember being number 300, I think.
Susan, you may have even been earlier than that.
Oh, really?
You had the privilege, I would say, tongue in cheek, of sitting with me in a restaurant in early 2000, or perhaps it was late 1999, where I laid out this idea to you, and I figured that I was going to explain it and then have to explain it again and then try to explain it a different way, but that wasn't the case. You heard what I had to say, and you got it right away, and that was a real eureka moment for me, because I figured that if I could sit down and explain it to someone who had a lot of genealogical experience, it wouldn't be such a difficult problem for us to explain this to thousands or tens of thousands of genealogists and have them nearly instantly understand what we could do with the technology. And that actually turned out to be the case.
It has really been an awesome thing to watch how this whole field has grown. And, you know, one of the things that, I have noticed, and I've been taking on caseloads. I've been doing professional genealogical work now for several months, which is, while I've been doing genealogy for 20-some-odd years, this is the first time since July, taken on caseloads. And, you know, there have been, over the course of the last 5-6 months, where I've come into situations whereby, you know, the only way we were going to make a discovery or make a connection is, you know, through DNA testing. You know, there's one case in particular, and I think I had emailed you, and it's something that, I think is important because, you know, there are a lot of situations, even going back many generations, where people had affairs. Things were not, directly lined up with what we consider familial situations. And, people are finding out that the person they thought may have been their father was not. And then they're finding out that they may have another father, and they're searching for this father. And they think they find him, but they can't figure out if this is really the person that may have been their father or not. And, you know, in these situations, and in particular this case that I'm working on right now, we have actually found a blood first cousin, male, to a male client. And, really the only way, as I see it, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, to prove that we may indeed, have the same father between these fathers of these two people, is to do DNA testing.
Well, Susan, you're correct, but I want to make sure that we don't give the listeners a misconception.
Sure.
DNA testing, when you're using the Y chromosome, can only tell you that two men are related. It can't tell you that they are first cousins or second cousins. It's just going to answer in a binary way, yes or no, that these men are related. So the first step would be to do a Y-DNA test on these two individuals to see if we have a Y chromosome link. If we have a Y chromosome link, then what that tells us with absolute certainty is that they both descend from a common male ancestor. Once you have established that fact, then there are some other types of tests, primarily autosomal paternity type tests that can be run that will establish whether someone is has a relationship of a father son, which would be a classic paternity test, or if the relatedness is further back, which might indicate that you didn't find exactly the right man, the who done it, so to speak, but you found the family. And so that's exactly what happened with one of our customers from Detroit. He had a fascinating story. It was written up on the front page of the Saturday issue of the Wall Street Journal about 4 months ago, where this individual had actually found he was given away or adopted at birth, and he had in his late 20s been able to actually find his biological birth mother's sister, who told him quite a bit of information about his mother, who had passed away, but no one knew anything about the father's line. And so this fellow asked all kinds of questions of his aunt, like who did my mom work for, and where did she work, and who did she date, and he pulled together that kind of information, but wasn't able to go any further, Susan. And even though he wanted to accomplish that in the 1980s, he had to wait for over 25 years until he happened to be sitting at a dinner table with some other couples one night and heard one fellow mention that he had just done a DNA test at Family Tree DNA, and his ears perked up. And the long and the short of it was that he ended up doing a DNA test with Family Tree DNA. He got a match to a particular name. He went back to his notes from his aunt and found that the surname that the match in our database showed him was the same surname as one of the places that his mother had actually worked. And so he started doing DNA testing. He found descendants of that man and of that man's several brothers, tested and found that it was indeed the right family, and then used autosomal or parentage type testing to prove which of those men he was closest related to. In other words, who would have been his half brother and who would have been his in effect half brother's first cousins. And so this type of testing is happening more and more often, and I would expect that as time goes on, the opportunities to use DNA testing to solve our genealogical puzzles is only going to get better and better, or shall we say more exciting for all of us. But remember, if you don't want to know the answer to the question, don't ask the question, and I think you all understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely. You know, I had another case situation I think was just really very powerful. And I'd like to share that with you, Bennett, and with the audience, because I, you know, there was no way that any other way we were going to solve this. But there, the research case came to me, and they had brickwalled. And the surname was Chandler, and the story was, is, you know, that they thought that the individual had changed his name, that he had gotten into trouble. They thought he was a horse thief. You know, the stories ran rampant in the family, and we were able to do quite a bit of research and you know, trying to isolate it. But at the very end of the day, and I mean, the first thing I had asked him when we first started is if he had done DNA testing, and he was, yes, part of the Chandler group. But what was very interesting is that, you know, we basically brickwalled, and suddenly he got a match, and the match was there was no match to anyone in the Chandler group. None. But somebody posted something on one of the big websites, and they posted the DNA, and he had a complete match, and the surname was not Chandler. And I'm not going to give out the surname for the sake of privacy for the families, but as it turned out, the family that he connected with had a family Bible, and he had his family Bible, and there was definitely a correlation in the link of the birthdays of the two individuals from his family Bible to their family Bible. So there were no records that could put this puzzle together, and only because of, you know, a match that was found a DNA match that was found, you know, on the internet. You know, were we able, or was he able, well, really, to really piece this together? Which, you know, brought up a question that he asked, and I'm going to ask it for him. And that is, you know, is there a way at some point in the future, if all the DNA companies, you know, could have some sort of centralized database recognizing that, you know, it doesn't benefit the other company. But, you know, the testing was done via two different companies, DNA testing companies. And I guess that's really what the question is, you know, is there a way that all the companies can benefit at some point, but, you know, bring together some sort of centralization?
Well, Susan, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked it. Let me first explain the problem, then I'll explain the solution.
Okay.
Not all laboratories use the same markers in our DNA panels. For example, we selected from the University of Arizona a dozen markers initially in 2000 that they happened to be using in-house. They were also doing a project for NIJ, National Institute of Justice, and they had discovered a series of markers. And so when we built our second panel, we included most of those markers in our second panel. Then we built a third panel as time went on, and as other companies started to look and see what we were doing and clone the idea, they started grabbing markers. But because they didn't want it to appear that what they were doing was a complete knockoff on what we were doing, they chose markers that they wanted to add into their panels. Now, in retrospect, it probably would have been better for everyone had those folks simply picked up the markers that we were always using for transportability purposes, but they didn't. And so what that means is that I test a series of markers, and other companies may test nearly every one of the markers that I test, but not all of the markers I test. And recognizing that could ultimately be a problem for the general community, in 2004, Family Tree DNA built a website. I'll say it slowly. It's www.ysearch.org, ysearch.org. And ysearch.org is a free Y chromosome comparative site where anyone who's tested with any DNA testing company anywhere in the world can get a free account and then can add his marker values into the system, and then they can compare to everyone else who has put their results into YSearch. And so not only are Family Tree DNA customers you know, putting their results into YSearch, but people who have tested with other companies are also doing the same thing. And so ultimately, we see YSearch as becoming, in effect, YDNA Central, where people who have tested at any DNA testing company can make comparisons on the markers that those different companies do, in fact, have in common. And so that explains the problem. That explains the solution. And also, we have built a similar site called mitosearch.org that does exactly the same thing on the female side or on the mitochondria side, because we don't want anyone to feel like they're left out. Now, on the other hand, you know, there's a lot of, you know, commercial benefits to having databases that are proprietary, and there's no company that has a database who makes that database fully publicly shareable. And the reason for that is privacy and confidentiality, Susan. So the only way we can get around the privacy and confidentiality walls that we have built to ensure our customers' privacy is to give them a post-testing option to put their results into into a website such as YSearch or MitoSearch?
I should have known that you would have thought of all that.
Well, we did, and of course, we would like everyone to test with us, but realistically, you're going, no matter how hard you work, you're going to get a certain, you know, percentage of the business, but, you know, the most valuable match for one of my customers might be sitting in one of our competitors' databases. And so we felt that to protect our customers' interests, that we needed to give them an option so that they wouldn't be frozen out because someone decided to test with another company, which, of course, you know, is their right, and it happens all the time. So it's the best solution given the situation. And we have had a number of people tell us that that even though they've gotten most of their matches out of our own Family Tree DNA database, that they've had situations that are very, very similar to your Chandler example, where they've had to reach out and look in another database. And so we thought having a very good, robust database to allow people to make those comparisons was another value for the industry that we could bring to the table.
Well, I think it's wonderful, and I think that it needs to be promoted a little bit more. I stumbled on it once before, but I didn't think I really understood what its purpose was.
Right. Well, that's the purpose. And on our web pages, after someone gets their results, we give them an option of a one-click upload to YSearch. Because we know that in all databases, it's garbage in, garbage out, and if someone doesn't pay attention to the keys on their keyboard that they're striking, they may enter a 13 instead of a 14 or something like that for a particular allelic value, which really defeats the matching purposes. And so we offer to our customers the ability to go into their personal page and to click a button and set up an account, and it'll automatically transfer all their results over. If you've tested with anyone else, of course you have to do that manually, and it would be wonderful if the other companies would offer such a feature to their customers, and we'd be happy to provide, you know, the background code that would allow for that one-click uploading, because it's really in everyone's best interest that, you know, that the databases stay as clean and pristine and accurate as possible.
You know, absolutely. I mean, that's one of the biggest, I think, complaints genealogists have today is there are so many trees that are being published that have so many inaccuracies in them, and then those get perpetuated and perpetuated and perpetuated, you know, that you know, the same thing could happen with, you know, the DNA testing. I mean, the simple end result is that, you know, people want, want the correct answers and, you know, whether it's their genealogy or the DNA testing. So, you know, I think it's, it is very important, and it seems to be, you know, one of the burdens of the beast, I guess one might say, is that as the industries have grown, as they have, we have to deal with a lot of these, issues. So I would hope, Bennett, that this, would get publicized more. I don't know how much of it. I mean, I don't stay totally abreast of everything, but, you know, maybe it's something we can do an article on in the Examiner, maybe just to promote it. I think it's very important that...
Well, that would be great. No, it's very, very important because, again, you know, we're trying to build an all-inclusive system that will help all genealogists from everywhere. And, you know, and a little bit of altruism mixed with capitalism, I think, Susan, is a wonderful thing. And, we've had a lot of success with our business. We've met a lot of wonderful people. We've heard some really heartwarming stories of people who have been able to find relatives using the tool that we created a decade ago, and to the extent that this is just one more step or one more added tool that we can provide to the industry, we're happy to have had the opportunity to do that.
You know, and going back, I mean, my interest was obviously piqued, and I understood it very well initially, as you mentioned, because, you know, I came from a mother who was adopted. So I knew instinctively, more so than those who come from, birth parents and know their birth parents, what it's like to have a dead end in your blood relations. And, you know, interestingly enough, I've actually got my brother involved in doing some genealogical work for my business, and he was adopted. And as you well know, we just had him tested for the first time at age 50-something.
Right.
These are unique cases, on Monday nights now, I think there's a television program on ABC called, Find Your Family, and most of it is helping adoptees find their birth parents. And, this is just one of the major tools that available that can pretty much make a difference on whether or not you can connect or not with an individual person.
Susan, I recently read a number that said that something like 3 million people in America are adopted or the children or grandchildren of adoptees. And while that's only 1% of the American population, 3 million people is a lot of people. And as these databases get better, and as people submit their results, I think that people are going to have greater and greater and greater likelihoods of finding their ancestors or finding their cousins, half sibs or cousins that 10 or 20 years ago. They knew that they had no opportunity to reach out and find, and now they're finding that they have opportunities and that some people are having great success in breaking down those brick walls, even when the court records may have remained sealed, or maybe just a piece of the court records opened up, which allowed someone to get a little piece of advice or a little piece of information that they've then been able to connect the dots. And so, the word social network is a real buzzword today. I contend that that genealogy was the original social networking tool. We've known about it for a long time, and that people who come to sites like ours and start exchanging stories with people that they didn't know, but that they match through their Y chromosome, that really they were the first folks who were involved in social networking, and then of course it became a popular expression in the press, and websites started building around it. But I'm going to always contend that in that great social networking scheme of things, that genealogy and then genetic genealogy were first and second.
Well, I have another interesting case, and I mean it's actually me. But we had one of my brothers tested both them with mitochondrial and Y, and over the last 20-some-odd years, there had been an individual that I'd been in contact with on my paternal side, which would be the Y-DNA side. And we have a matching, of course, surname. And I got an email from him several months ago, and I don't know if I shared that with you. He wrote to me, and he said that he had just gotten his results and that he matched my brother. on the Y side, he says, but what is really astonishing is, he says, I also matched your brother on the maternal side.
Okay.
And, you know, this is my adopted mother's side that you know, we have yet to figure out. So what would you make of that?
Well, first of all, it's not the first time that I've seen this happen.
Okay.
I don't see it happen often, but I see it happen. The more we deal in ethnic groups that practice endogamy, which means marrying
yeah.
within the group,
okay.
we're more likely to see these kinds of things. I have someone in England who tested her brother, and her brother's Y chromosome matches someone, and then they tested their female inherited DNA, and that female inherited DNA, among matching many people, matches one man who happened to share their Y chromosome as well. And so what we have to remember is that today populations are very large. But if we go back just 10 generations, which takes us to, at the most the 1700s, and if we go back 15 generations, which takes us to the 1600s, the actual population size of a village was much smaller than the number of great, great, great to the 10th or 15th grandparents that you would have had. And what that means is that all of us who stayed in a fairly tight geographical area are cousins. And, you know, we know that's the case. If we don't think about it, it may be a little shocking to some individuals, but the fact is the fact that in the old days, we typically married people that lived 5 to 10 kilometers from the village that we lived in, and we did that, and we didn't move very much, and in the next generation, the same thing happened, and we simply swapped a lot of genes with our neighbors, because those neighbors, over a short period of time, became our extended family. They became our cousins through marriage. And so the situation that you've mentioned is kind of one that brings a smile to the eye or to the face. It clearly indicates that what we know about history, which is we didn't move very much from generation to generation and married people who lived close to us, was true, and we see that in our genes. And I think as we look at more and more and more of our DNA, we're going to see that more and more and more commonly going into the future.
So, you know, it really is. And I mean, explain the difference between the mtDNA test and what it shows versus the Y. It doesn't really make the same connections.
Okay, so the Y chromosome looks at a man's father's 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 direct male line, and it'll take you back all the way to what we call anthropology days, before the written word. It'll take you back 10 or tens of thousands of years, and it will allow us to attach you to a branch of the tree of mankind. In that respect, we can use the Y chromosome as both an anthropological test and a genealogical test. We can use it for two different purposes. So if you're not interested in genealogy, but you only want to know if you're a descendant of New Stone Age farmers who came out of Kurdistan 10,000 years ago and moved into Europe, a simple DNA test on the Y chromosome will answer that. You can also use the same data to find recent family that you didn't know that you had, and that would be using it in a genealogical fashion. Now, the female inherited DNA mutates or changes much more slowly. Its evolutionary clock speed is much slower than the Y chromosome, or the portion of the Y chromosome that we use for genealogical purposes. And so traditionally, using an MT DNA test, which is the shorthand for a mitochondria DNA test, which, by the way, everyone has. So I can look at my mitochondria, and Susan, a woman can look at her mitochondria. Your mitochondria is going to be identical to anyone who has the same mother as you, and so forth. So everyone that's descended from a female will have the same mitochondria. Of course, females don't get a Y chromosome. If y'all did, you wouldn't be females, you'd be guys.
Right.
But because the female inherited mitochondria changes or mutates at a slower speed than the Y chromosome, traditionally it hasn't been used genealogically. It's only been used anthropologically to hang you on one of the 20 or 25 branches of the tree of mankind. And it also gives you that geographical specificity so that we can look at your female mitochondria and say whether your DNA is Native American, African, or European, or even Asian in that respect. Now, recently there have been some advances on the mitochondria side. For example, we have been offering to test the entire mitochondria molecule, which is not a simple 500 base pair test, but it looks at the entire mitochondria, which is well over 16,000 bases long, and it gives us some very, very fine resolution specificity. In fact, the entire academic community has now abandoned just looking at what we refer to as HVR1, which means hypervariable region number one, and now in all of their scientific studies, they're looking at the full mitochondria. Well, another benefit of looking at the full mitochondria is that if two people match identically on the full mitochondria, then the likelihood that they share a common female ancestor in the last 300 or 400 years is probably in the 80 or 90 percentile, which
wow.
means that by using the entire mitochondria molecule, we can almost reach the same confidence intervals that we can when we use one of our typical Y-DNA tests. And the genealogical community understands that. We recently lowered the price of our full mitochondria test substantially so that we could increase the size of the database and create more of these high-resolution matches. That's been going very well, and we see that as the new emerging platform for people who want to test on their maternal side, because it gives a much tighter prediction as to when those two people shared a common female ancestor, which of course is what we're all looking to answer. And it also gives some very specific geographical information, whereas in the past, if I looked at your hypervariable region 1 and 2, I might find people from England, Ireland, and Poland. And that would be one of those head-scratchers, Susan, because you know I can understand a genetic connection and a genealogical connection between England and Ireland, but between England, Ireland, and Poland, it makes it a little bit more challenging. What we found out when we started testing those English, Irish, and Polish individuals and looking at their entire mitochondria is we found that in the coding region, in other words, in the other 16,000 base pairs that we were looking at, we found lots of differences between the Polish group on the one side and the English-Irish group on the other side. And as you might expect, the English and Irish had nearly identical full mitochondria signatures, whereas the person who hailed from Poland was substantially different. And so we got a real benefit out of looking at a much larger chunk of the female mitochondria. And I think that that's part of the reason that that the genealogical community has become very excited about that over the last year.
So what you might recommend is that this individual whose mitochondrial matches my brother's mitochondrial might be worth testing at this upper level.
That, Susan, that's exactly right. Because what this is going to tell us is whether they are likely pretty closely related to each other, or did they just happen to have a match because there hasn't been a lot of genetic change on either of their mitochondria over the last 1,000 years. Because if they're related to you 1,000 years ago, I don't want to be disingenuous about this, but you probably don't really care. On the other hand, if you find that there's an 80 or 90% likelihood that you're related to them in 300 or 400 years or less, with the 300 or 400 years being the outside bounding box, then all of a sudden that could get very, very interesting, and it could make it worth your time pursuing their family and to see if possibly your mother is a very, very close descendant of the person that that your brother matches.
Exactly. So what, you know, when you talk about greatly reduced, I mean, what would a test like this in the, you know, run today?
I'm sorry, you're talking about cost-wise?
Yes.
Okay, so just so that you have the history of this, when we originally announced this product in 2005, we started selling it for what I will admit is an outrageous price of $895.
Okay.
And over time, the price came down to $695, and most recently, it had been selling for $495. And this is for people who have never tested their mitochondria at all. Recently, we added some equipment here at our lab, which allowed us to almost triple our production of these. In other words, we could have one person working in the lab, and they could produce three times as much work as they were able to before. And so we dropped the price to most recently $279. When we introduced the sale, we had it at $249. And my guess is that if someone wants to wait for another couple of years, that you should see another fairly serious percentage-wise price reduction, because, you know, as new equipment comes onto the market that allows us to be much more productive, we get to translate that into lower prices, which translate into more customers being able to, you know, to purchase, and it allows our databases to grow, which is the real objective.
Certainly. So, you know, also too, I mean, you know, the Y-marker tests have grown substantially over the years. And, you know, if you'd like to, it would really, I think, be helpful to understand the growth process of that and what the markers, you know, that are being tested today and how that fits. And especially, you know, I guess with this ysearch.org, I mean, if there are multiple marker tests being done, you know, how many markers does ysearch include?
Well, first of all, at Family Tree DNA, we offer a 12-marker test, a 37-marker Y-DNA test, and a 67-marker Y-DNA test. And then we have a series of specialty markers, some that mutate very quickly, some that are just for a particular haplogroup or branch of the tree of mankind. And so we actually offer a total of 118 markers. Nearly every one of those markers and every one or practically every one of my half a dozen competitors' markers that may not be included in our 67 markers have been added, to not only our advanced testing regimen at Family Tree, but also to the choices where you can enter results at, at ysearch.org. And so what that means is that theoretically someone could test nearly 100 markers very easily today, and they could make comparisons on those 100 markers. And when two people even match each other identically on 67 markers, what you find is that there is probably an 80% likelihood that those people are related in the last five generations, Susan. So okay. if we were to just do a quick calculation, if I have a 67 for 67 or even a 66 of 67 marker match with someone, and I do with people who have a different surname than I do, what that would mean is that I would take my birth date, which is approximately 1950. I would then subtract five generations. That's roughly 125 years, although arguably it could be 135 or even 150 years. But what that would mean is that that fellow who has that 66 of 67 marker match with me has a very, very high likelihood of sharing a common ancestor with me somewhere between 1800 and 1825. So that puts you back to where most people, if they're good researchers and they're diligent genealogists, can probably find, from their own paper trail. My situation is a bit unusual in that my great-grandfather came to this country and never had brothers or sisters in the United States, never talked about where he came from. We don't even know if his real surname was Greenspan. For all we know, it might be Braverman, which is the name of my closest non-Greenspan match at our system. And indeed, this Mr. Braverman individual, comes from Eastern Europe, and that's all we know that my great-grandfather came from was Eastern Europe. Now, perhaps if I could find some Castle Island information, which I have tried and failed to my great chagrin to do, then we might be able to obtain a little bit more geographical data. But for people who know where their ancestors came from, who have solid 66, 67 marker matches, we can be quite confident that they're related, certainly since 1800 or approximately 1800, which for most genealogists is plenty of information to push us and point us in the right direction.
So if someone's making or trying to make a decision as to what marker test to start with, what would be the driving decision-making pointer that you would give, whether you choose to go with a 12 or you choose to go with a 67?
Understand. Well, first of all, if you are from Western Europe, where there had been a population bottleneck and then a very, very fast expansion of the population, and in effect, most people in Western Europe have similar Y chromosomes because, look, the weather was good. After agriculture began, the harvests, by and large, were good, and populations exploded. And so there may not have been many founders, but there sure were a lot of children. In a situation like that, you need to err on the side of more markers. If all you're trying to do is to see if your Sigelskis from Poland are related to another Sigelski family in Poland, and that's all you want to do, then probably a 12-marker test will work just fine, because Poland is far enough east that there's a lot of genetic variation in Poland because there have been a lot of there have been a lot of conquerors who have come to Poland, but in Western Europe, where it was you know, further from Central Asia, most people, if they were coming out of Central Asia, they'd never made it to Western Europe, and so the genetic diversity in Western Europe is much lower, whereas it's much greater in Eastern Europe. And if you come from a place with a lot of genetic diversity, you can generally squeeze by on using less markers. But if you're from England, Ireland, Scotland, and really anywhere in Western Europe, I would now suggest that you start with a 37 marker test. And the tests have come down, Susan, so much in price since we started this nearly 10 years ago. I remember that our initial 12 marker test was $219. Mm-hmm. And today, even without the benefit of our year-end holiday sale, the 37 marker test is $149. So, and it's even less today on the website because of the end of the year holiday sale. So the 37 marker test today is truly a bargain. It's probably all the markers that most people would ever need. Some people want more, but it's arguable whether they really need more to find a connection, to themselves on the direct mail line.
So basically what you're saying is in some of these cases that you can start off with the 12, and then if you find something that is of interest to you, that you may want to upgrade to a higher marker test and see where that connection brings you.
Well, Susan, if I agree with you in that statement, I know that I'm going to have some of my good friends in the genealogical community, write me emails and throwing rocks at me. Because
don't want that.
Well, I wanted to explain it. Because ultimately, I'm a believer of eating the elephant in pieces. So for my own Greenspan project, since we know there's a lot of genetic variation among men who have the name Greenspan, and we know that from observation, I always start my Greenspan guys at a 12-marker test, and then if they match me or if they match one of the large existing Greenspan groups, I upgrade them, to a higher marker level. There are a lot of group administrators that we work with who feel that that they may have one shot at getting a person to order a test, and therefore they want them to get all 37 markers at one time. From our standpoint, we preserve the client's DNA for 25 years. And so from our standpoint, it doesn't matter. I'm always looking for people to spend the least amount of money to get the most information. And that's why I err generally on suggesting to people, unless they're from Western Europe, that they just start with a 12 marker test and upgrade as needed.
And would that hold true for the Native American population?
If someone wants to determine if they're actually Native American,
mm-hmm.
we can do that with a simple 12 marker test. If they're trying to match to other people who they're genetically related to, let's say on the Y chromosome, that's an example of where the 37 marker test would be more valuable. But even with the initial 12 marker test, I can tell someone if they're Native American or if they're African, let's say on their direct father's line. And we do that all the time, and quite often we surprise people who sometimes tell us that they had no knowledge whatsoever of Native American ancestry, and they do a DNA test and they find it. And then of course it flips the other way, where someone is adamant that their direct male ancestor was Native American, and they do a DNA test and they find that individual on the male side happens to be European. That doesn't mean that individual didn't marry with a Native American, and the European may have acculturated into the Native American society, and the fact that that it was a mixed marriage, so to speak, might not have been talked about, but we see those things all the time.
So let's take this one step further, because you've piqued my interest in a case that I'm working on right now. If I have a client who is mixed, African American and white, and we know that there apparently was white male on his father's 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 side, would a 12-marker DNA test be able to show that?
Okay, so let me repeat the question.
I know, it gets confusing.
Okay, so you said that we have an African-American, and there may have been a rumor, or the individual may think that they may or may not be African on their father's 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 direct male line. If
correct.
The individual did a simple, basic 12-marker Y-DNA test, would we be able to tell them that your dad's 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 dad was African or was European? With just that basic test, the answer is yes. From a simple, basic 12-marker test, I can answer whether an individual on the direct male line was Native American, was African, or was European. And I can break down the European generally pretty well and give you an idea of whether it's a typical Western European lineage or whether it's probably a Scandinavian lineage. I can also tell an individual from that same 12-marker test if their DNA is typical of either Jews, Arabs, or the New Stone Age farmers who came out of the Middle East 8,000 or 9,000 years ago and taught Europeans how to farm. Now, I didn't say that I could always separate Jews from Arabs from those Neolithic farming samples, but we're certainly working on that. But that gives you an idea with just the basic testing what we're able to accomplish.
So, but that would not work if there was a female in the picture between the male and the other ancestors, male ancestors.
Susan, that's exactly right. Genetic genealogy at this point is based entirely on a direct, unbroken chain of descent. So a man to his son, to his son, to his son. If we have a man who was Native American, who had a son, and then that man's son's daughter, okay, would not pass on her dad's Y chromosome, and so it wouldn't matter who she married, we would not be able to see the Native American direct male signal in a daughter. And so we have to remember, when we say direct line of descent, that doesn't mean it's just a cousin of yours. We're talking about someone who's in the line of the father's 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 father, or on the mom's side, the mother's 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 mother. Now, typically, when we test individuals who wonder if they have Native American ancestry, we don't find that very much on the male side, Susan. We find it a lot on the female side. And what that tells us is something that we know. It's painful, it's historical, but it's also accurate and honest, which is that when two cultures collide, the victorious males tend to kill off the males from the losing side, and then the victorious males generally marry or take the women from the losing side and have babies with them. So those Native American women who had lost their husbands or their men may very well then have had children with, let's say, Europeans, and 3, 4, 5, 6 generations later, when it's not even rumored that great, 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 great grandma was Native American, what we'll find when we test people is a Native American DNA signature, that's found in an individual, and the individual will come to us and say, well, I thought that my great-great-great-grandmother was European because they didn't know any different. But in fact, we'll find that on that direct female side, the individual might have been Native American or African.
I have one more question, and then I'm going to let you go. Is there any possibility on any horizon that if you have a family, as I have a case, where an individual had two daughters, and this individual seems to have been an alien on this earth prior to 1920, is there any way that this industry, genetic DNA and genetic genealogy, is going to be able to help open up some of these cases that are really stuck with the current DNA processing?
Well, Susan, it's already beginning to happen. I'll give you an example since you brought up the a situation of two girls. Quite often we'll have a couple of girls who wonder if they share the same dad. They know they don't share the same mother, but they'll wonder if they share the same dad. In cases like that, there's a solution today. It's called using what's called the X chromosome, which we haven't talked about at all. But, Susan, I'll use you as an example. You have two X chromosomes. You have one from your mother, and you have one from your father. Your mother had two X chromosomes. She passed one of her two X's to you, and then, of course, your dad passed an X, which is why you're a girl. Your brother received one of your mom's two X chromosomes, but he received a Y chromosome from your dad. And so he's a guy. Well, in the example that I was giving, let's say that we have a couple of sisters who are full sibs, and then we have a third woman who comes around, and she says, you know, I really think that your dad was with my mom at one time and that we're half sisters. What we can do is, since the man only has one X chromosome, he would have given his daughters, all of his daughters, the same X chromosome every time he had a child. And so what we can do is we can do an analysis of all three sisters in the example that I just gave, and we can then tell you with 99.8 or 99.9% assuredness that the three girls do share a common father, or that they do not share a common father. And actually, the percentages on this test are just as high as a paternity test if we have three girls that we're able to do the testing on.
Okay.
All right. Hope I wasn't confusing on that one. We have a website that employs that called DNAfindings.com, where we actually now do paternity testing and complex relatedness testing, where we actually get one of our scientists from the lab involved in every single case. And so there's more and more on the horizon, yes, but that's one good practical example where we've helped a number of people over the last 18 months, where they were in a particular situation where the father had passed away, perhaps the both biological mothers had passed away, and you've got three siblings wondering if all three of them share the same dad or not.
Okay. Now, the situation that I'm looking at is trying to connect two males, or trying to find a relationship between two males with the same surname where the descendants are all females.
Okay, say it one more time. You have two men.
Two men that carry the same surname. And
okay.
They had daughters and no sons.
They had daughters, so... okay, and exactly what are we trying to prove? You're trying to prove
if
that they, those two
if
men
we
were related?
These two people to a common ancestor.
Okay, there's nothing on the there's nothing available yet, but
okay.
You know, I think that we have to take a very broad-minded approach to genetic genealogy as more of our genome can be tested, and we're probably just a few years away from seeing the entire genome tested for people at a fraction of what it sells for today, I think that we'll have the opportunity to make the kinds of breakthroughs you're talking about. And that's something that we should address in another news or another radio program as science marches forward.
Wonderful. Because,
right?
Yeah, those are, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of, you know, situations where the current DNA testing does not fit.
We understand that.
And I seem to be running into some of those, and you know, I just kind of wish that, you know, I had some answers both for my client, you know, from a research side and as well as a DNA side. Bennett, you want to give out your website before we close?
Sure. People can find us on the World Wide Web at FamilyTreeDNA.com. If listeners would like to email me directly, I'm very much an open book, and I'm located at bcg@familytreedna.com. And for complex relational questions, dnafindings.com would be a good place to start.
Great. Bennett, thank you for your time. It's been, again, enlightening. Even though I think I know a lot of this stuff, I find that I learn something new every day. I don't know how you're staying up with it. Most of your time must be spent on educating yourself. I don't know how you do it. It's
I will tell you, though, it's left-brain stuff you're doing. It's a labor of love, no matter what I'm doing, to acquire the knowledge.
It's very apparent. In any event, thank you again, and hopefully we'll have you back soon.
Okay, very good. I'll look forward to that.
As things progress in the industry,
things are probably
changing dynamically these days.
Okay, very good.
Okay, Bennett, thank you.
Thanks.
Next week, everybody, we're going to have the show that we were going to have a couple months ago with Summer McStravick and Venus Andrek. This is going to be a really fun hour with probably two of the most enlightening people, Summer and her flow dreaming concept, and her mother with her mojo. So stay tuned next week, December 15th. This is Susan King. This has been Where Genealogy and Spirit Connect. And you can find me at www.susaneking.com. Have a good week.